Well, we all live in these three dimensions of time. The past, which we would mostly like to forget. The present, which is most uncomfortable. And the future, which is rather abstract and dim. So in these three dimensions of existence, we try to find a philosophy of life that will help us to capitalize on the various liabilities that are accumulated along the way of life. One of the problems that many older people suffer from is too good a memory of the past. As they grow older, the intervals between youth and age gradually fade away. But many of the episodes of early life become increasingly unpleasant or tension-ridden as we've tried to not remember but cannot actually forget our own past. I think we should all begin to understand the past as a kind of laboratory in which a great many experiments were made. Some were useful, some were useless. Some have advanced our destinies, and others have definitely damaged us. But the past is a long way off, and actually there is nothing the human being can do about it in most cases. He would like to forget, but he cannot. But instead of forgetting, he should begin to remember in terms of lessons, in terms of experiences and adventures that have contributed to the major episodes of his career. If we will take each disappointment and try to understand what it finally did for us, we will not be so unhappy because of what it did to us. In the problem of the past, we realize one thing in particular. The individual who looks back on his own past is not the same person who had the experiences of the past. Practically every part of his nature, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual, are different from the days of his extreme youth. He is no longer the person he was. He is now struggling as hard as he can to become the person he wants to be. But in the interval, he may blame himself and go through a series of traumatic circumstances because of the mistakes he made while he was young. As he is not the same person, it is difficult for him to judge his own past. It is almost as difficult as it would be for him to judge someone else's past. According to our natures and temperaments, we use the past in various ways. One of the usages is to excuse our present weaknesses, or to explain why we are not doing better now. This part of the excuse mechanism is not relevant. The individual who has gone through an important conglomerate of experiences has had very valuable opportunities to learn. At the time, he could not use these opportunities. He was too much involved in them. But now, looking back over a period of years, he can gradually put his own life in order. And nearly everyone past middle age has some part of this problem to face. He must gradually transform the years that have passed into lessons, opportunities, realizations, and discoveries. He should not go on blaming himself forever for his mistakes, nor should he try to excuse the condition of the present time on the ground of an unfortunate or distressful childhood. There is never any excuse for the individual to be what he was yesterday or be what he was many years ago except to learn. and to try to use these experiences as excuses for present peculiarities is a waste of time. It is very good to remember the past for what it has done to help us to grow. And the things that have helped us the most are the things, probably, that we most resent. We have to recognize the importance of environment upon our personal characteristics. Also, as we go back over past within ourselves, we have become involved in the past of the collective to which we belong. Those who can remember back 40 or 50 years remember back to a way of life that is practically extinct. They remember conditions and circumstances which just no longer exist. And in many instances, they continue to bring forward into present conditions old policies that are no longer workable. Thus, we have the very conservative person who is constantly regretting that the past no longer dominates his personal life. He wishes he could be back in an environment of 50 years ago, when things seemed more honest, where the world seemed to be more reasonable, where opportunities to live were more simple. All these are nostalgic remembrances of past times. Yet if this same person today was actually transported back to that time that he is thinking about, it would no longer seem attractive to him. It is because in the course of remembering, emotion steps in and dramatizes and glorifies things that are no longer possible. Actually, we have to face the simple fact that as times change, our own patterns of conviction must also be gradually modified. We had certain beliefs that were sufficient to the 20s and 30s of the present century, but these beliefs do not do much for us today. They are no longer capable of carrying us constructively over the patterns of problem which we now face. Therefore, it is a mistake to try to force the past upon us or to try to live in a generation that no longer exists. Many people try to do this, and in some instances they seem to have a certain measure of success, but they have it at the expense of new growth. They are not able to handle the opportunity of the moment. They are not able to make the decisions that are necessary now because their decision mechanism is centered 30 or 40 years ago. So the past becomes quite a problem. The past becomes the source of a great evasion mechanism that is more or less substantiated by modern psychoanalysis. Psychology, as it is practiced today, depends very heavily upon the past life of the person to explain his present condition. While there is some validity in this, the continual emphasis upon the past merely indicates to the professional that the person has not outgrown his own earlier life. He is still focused in it, even though years have passed. He is still trying to dramatize events and practices and policies which he can no longer follow or apply to his present condition. Now, I know in working with people myself that nearly everyone who is in trouble in some way blames the past for it. He blames the fact that his parents did not understand him. That was 25, 30 years ago. He also blames the circumstance that he came from a broken home. This also was long ago. He finds out also that various experiences of early life, association with other people, damaged him to some degree. He may have decided to make changes in his life without due thoughtfulness. Health problems may have burdened him. Early relationships, romantic situations, may have proven to be unfortunate. And gradually the person has come to consider himself, as he is now, as a victim of his own earlier living. And he is able very clearly, to his own satisfaction, to prove that he was not responsible for the misfortunes that occurred to him. Now, nature has given us a series of faculties and powers with which to cope with events. The human mind and the emotional nature, if properly and normally educated, both of these can help us to solve any problem or dilemma that arises within ourselves. But very often we do not use these faculties to solve. We use them to justify a condition that exists today. We blame the past, therefore, for the problems and unhappiness that we have now. We believe firmly that if we had married a different person, it would all be different. If our parents had taken different attitudes, we would be happier. If we had not been subject to too much criticism, if there was not too much favoritism in the family, we would be much happier today. All of these points can be rationalized and can be justified in a certain way. They can be justified because they did happen. They can be justified because they hurt us when they happened. But that they should continue to hurt us 30 or 40 years later is simply not justified. We find that we have not outgrown our own past. And this is something that every individual has to learn to do. One of the ways of outgrowing your past is to approach it in an entirely different manner. And that is to approach it in terms of education. What did we learn? Where did we miss the message? What happened that should have been more important to us and we paid no attention to it? What have we done with a life in later years to clear up the difficulties of the past? It may well be that 15, 20 years ago, we began to study a little philosophy, perhaps became more idealistic, had better religious associations, and tried to understand the laws of the universe in which we live. For 12 or 15 years, we have been continuing this research. But for one reason or another, it has not affected this load of the past in us. We have had a new philosophy. We claim new beliefs. We believe in universal justice and integrity. We believe in reincarnation and karma. And yet those old grievances sit just as firmly as they were before. We do not apply what we are believing now to our estimation of our own past. We continue to be irritable in spite of the fact that we are studying a philosophy that tells us not to be irritable. We continue to hate people when the text we are reading tells us to learn to love them. We continue to blame others, but the philosophy tells us that we are to blame for our own troubles. But all of these teachings which put the blame back upon us are quietly ignored. We still take the teaching, but we do not apply it to the memory sequences of our own living. We do not try to make these adjustments, which we know should be part of growth. We want to become better people. We want to be greater in our idealism and devotion and more sincere in our religious conviction. And yet there is this load of undigested incidents in our background, which we simply cannot let go of. I know a person who was very deeply involved in the idea of universal brotherhood and believed firmly that we should all get along together. They had a very nice philosophy of life, and they were trying their best to live it. But one day they heard of a relative who was coming from back east to visit them. Instantly, all the mood changed. Bitterness was all over the place. And this person frankly said, if this person comes to my house, I will throw them out. In the fact, all around were little pictures of Jesus. There were good greetings. There were good friendships. But the personal grievance was bigger than anything else. Now, it may not be that the average person has such a strong grievance. But there are mostly, in most lives, there are persons we're not very anxious to meet again. We cannot forgive them what they did to us. And by having this lack of forgiveness, we also, in many cases, have failed to estimate the facts themselves very carefully. It is very difficult to be imposed upon by another unless we have some ulterior motives in ourselves. If what we are trying to do is to promote our own interests at the expense of other people, it is very likely that we try to do this and injure them. Then when they react, we are miserable. But we forget entirely what our own motive was. So to go back and study these things, it is necessary to get a good separate look and be able to really try to clear this memory stable of all the evil and negative thoughts that are there. It's a real project, and the more we are overburdened by the past in our daily living and realize this, the more important it becomes to clear the situation as quickly as possible. So the past should be gradually reduced to a textbook in which we can discover ourselves, our mistakes, the miscalculations that we made, the failure to meet things honestly and fairly, procrastination and personal emotion and jealousies and things of this nature which made the whole pattern unpleasant over a period of years. After a little while, we can, with a little thought, get a more impersonal attitude towards our own past. After all, it's gone. We are not going to gain anything by holding on to it dramatically. Whatever happened then happened. It's not going to be changed. For the most part, the only part of the picture that can be changed is our relationship to it. We can change our point of view on any problem, but this is the only way we can alter it in any appreciable degree. So out of the past comes a vast body of information. It is almost like a study of the world's memory. We remember history, we remember religion, art, music, literature, philosophy, science. All of these great streams of tradition have descended to us from the past. And they have become, to a large measure, the dominant forces of the present day. And many of these things that have descended to us, in the hope that we would use them wisely, have become the basis of further misfortunes, misunderstandings, crime, war, and bloodshed. Actually, this past has to be handled very intelligently. And for most persons, the only past that they really can work with is themselves, because they are the only person who actually knows what they thought and how they felt when various circumstances arose. So it would be very nice, especially with older people who become more or less alone in life or do not have the activities of earlier days, to be able to live very quietly and constructively and happily with themselves. And if they can get rid of memories that are unfortunate, this is one of the major ways of living more comfortably with your own mental and emotional life. And the only way we can possibly get rid of these memories constructively is not to try to forget them, but to remember them very clearly and remember how we could have prevented them or have solved them, and even at a late time, honestly estimate the factors involved. And if we were guilty of a mistake, remember that it was years ago. It may have been the best thing we knew at the moment. It was all we had to work with at the moment. We had no discipline over the various attitudes of our minds and hearts, so we reacted perhaps unfortunately. So we are in the presence of an unfortunate situation due to lack of maturity. We are the victims of our own ignorance at the moment. This ignorance may be painful at the time and may continue to be a little regretted, but it can take the edge off of practically every destructive memory and assure us that we were doing the best we knew at the time. But now, from a longer perspective, the great lesson, the real meaning of the incident, can be estimated and become part of soul growth and soul power within our own natures. There is no reason why we cannot make the experiences that have troubled us the foundation of a new enlightenment, a richer relationship with conditions as they really are. So out of the past, we come and move into the present. Now, the present at this time is a unique immediacy. It is probably something that we have never quite experienced before and may never experience again in the long cycles of living. This tremendous emergency in which we are now functioning. We are living in a time in which a lot of old blackbirds are coming back to roost under our eaves. Mistakes that we made in the past collectively are beginning to move in on us. Habits that were wrong are affecting nations and races and societies. And nearly every negative emotion or attitude that has troubled us in the past is being thrown into our faces again. This is because we didn't solve it in the first place. And this is the second place, and the second place is now. So the immediacy is a time of tremendous value to us. It is a time in which we should do everything possible to become correctly informed about the conditions under which we live. It is not any longer reasonable or proper to simply throw blame around. It is easy enough to accuse everybody of everything, just as we in the past personally may have accused people of wrongdoing, which was really our own fault. But this problem of throwing blame around is of no value to us. The average citizen must face the simple fact that he is not going to be able to control the fate and destiny of the world in which he lives. The only way in which he can try something is usually violence, which only complicates and dramatizes and injures the values involved. But we are here as private citizens. We are not going to be here for the whole of the pattern, in most probabilities, unless we are quite young. We are here and we are learning something, and then we are going to retire before the final decisions are given. These decisions we will catch up with at a later time. But at the moment, we are working to try to prevent the world as it is from damaging the inner life of the individual. He may face the physical circumstances, but he cannot afford to allow the problems that are occurring to acidify his inner life. He cannot become a hater or a doubter or a cynic or a skeptic or an activist simply because the world is in trouble. Here again, we have a great problem to face, the problem of learning to live according to the inner part of our natures. Gradually, in the last 25 years especially, we have given every emphasis to material things. We have made the comfort of the body the most important of all considerations. We have also developed the idea that minds are not made to think with, their minds are made to be entertained by. Also, the emotions are not something to stir up some really constructive values in our lives. Our emotions are simply gratifications of various tensions, pressures, and stresses within our own psychic constitution. Therefore, today, we are living on the outside of ourselves. We are living on the outside of human society. We are living on the outside of a small planet on a very small solar system. and that with all this limitation upon ourselves, it should become more or less obvious that we are not here as individuals to make the tremendous, stressful efforts to change the world. What we have to do is to learn for ourselves why things are as they are, what is wrong with them, and how they can be cured or helped, and then take these decisions and apply them directly to ourselves. In other words, we have to adjust to an environment which can be traumatic. It can be no longer a lesson. It can be just pain. It can no longer be accepted as a step forward in personal growth. It is simply bewilderment. Little by little, the individual is allowing the virtues which he was born with to fade away within himself. His life is one of compromises. His life is devoted very largely to gratification of whatever pleasures or enjoyments he can find. And, of course, one of the main things is to keep his mind off of the realities of the circumstances with which he is surrounded. He does not want to partake of anything. He wants to laugh and play his way through his years and look forward almost hopefully to the possibility of ultimate extinction. This is the way the average person today is thinking. Wonderful things are happening from which he can learn something. But he is too busy trying to escape any form of mental or emotional discomfort or anything that involves too much physical labor. He simply wants to live as a perpetual adolescent, gratifying his feelings continuously and gaining nothing from his embodiment in this troubled sphere. Never before, probably, has the world as we know it been a better textbook than it is now. Nearly everything we need to know is right here. What we should do about it is more or less right here. What we can do about it may be less obvious, but it is still somewhere lurking in the patterns. We can and must recognize that this is no time to devote the rest of our lives to various electronic games or something of that nature. This is not the time to relax on recreational drugs. This is not the time for the individual to lose all track of his integrities. This is a time in which the individual must either gain a new insight into values, or he will not only have a wasted life, but he will have a life that has a very hard and tragic termination. He has to begin to make use of the present as a means of gaining insights. The world today should tell him a great many things about his own selfishness, his own cupidities, his own arrogance, and most of all, of his eternal and continuing self-centeredness. He should learn, maybe as the Buddhist knew years ago, that we are not here merely to compete with each other. We are not here to try to outdo the achievements of another and rise to success over the bodies of those whom we have sacrificed to our ambitions. We are here to develop a commune of cooperative realizations. We are here to learn to live together as friends, as neighbors, and as workers toward a common goal, the improvement of society. If we continue as we are, with no one really caring about trying to do anything about anything except to be as comfortable as possible, the situation will go worse and worse, and little by little, the karma of negligence will descend upon all of us. Then the interesting fact of the problem comes into focus. Even though a major disaster should occur, and we hope it won't, the individual who is right inside will not only survive, but will find that he can handle the problem to his own need without great tragedy or trauma. if the person is right, if the person is sound in his own convictions, the circumstances around him cannot shake him from his foundation. If, however, he has no foundation and is just living from day to day, hopefully or regretfully, he will find in an emergency he has nothing to depend on. He will simply be a shipwrecked character in a sea of trouble. So it is very necessary for the individual to begin to use constructively and with dedication the faculties with which he has been endowed. Each person should be a little island of honesty in this sea of competition. Each individual should do what he knows inside himself to be right. And he should also realize that he was not put here to waste time. He was put here to learn something. And if he learns it, he will live. If he doesn't learn it, his troubles will be multiplied. We are here in a world that is full of opportunities for magnificent progress. We are living on the verge of an age in which things could be more remarkable and useful than ever before. But our only reaction seems to be to abuse and neglect the values that we most should cherish. So in the present, we have all kinds of little decisions that we have to make. One of the things that we have to get over is despair. That nothing will work out well is something we do not dare to even for a moment assume. But today we find something interesting and a little dangerous. We find people more interested in the emotional reaction to disaster. We find book after book being published telling of the terrible things to happen. We also watch television while the actors invade us from outer space and do everything you can think of, including dramatizing prehistoric monsters rising out of the sewers of Los Angeles. All of this is part of a tremendous negative anxiety. We find that there's nothing that really amuses us now except tragedy, immorality, and violence. And everything is being done to educate us to this. The problem being that all of these programs are mass production with only one consideration: to get as wide an audience as possible. So by means of various drama and dramatic situations, we are able to contribute trauma to our associates, which apparently is the motive behind most of this. What we are really trying to do is to frighten the individual out of his wits and sell him deodorants at the same time. Well, we now also have the emerging countries that are looking forward to the time when they can be as badly off as we are. We are also helping them to develop all their industries, arts, sciences, and overthrow their various political allegiances, so that in the end they can compete with us, so that they will add to our own unemployment and things of this nature. Now, to help these people would have been a wonderful thing, and it is a wonderful thing to help people who are trying to help themselves. But when all we do is communicate to them an ethical code as weak as our own, and even weaker, we are only creating further problem for the future. While we work with these emerging nations, this third group that everyone is talking about, we know they're going to copy what we do, what we think, and what we are. So we should give them something worth copying. We should give them the proof every day that by the development of their integrities, they can free their people, give them a new lease on liberties and life, and become members of a solid commonwealth of peoples. Unless we set an example, then they will follow the one we do set, and as soon as possible, they will compete with us, if possible, to overcome our superiority or advancement in political and social and industrial ways. So in our modern time, it is very important to start in to find enough about ourselves, about our inner workings, to decide what we are doing to damage situations. The average individual is not informed sufficiently on the problems of world relationships to be dogmatic on these subjects. And his information is largely conditioned by unreasonable factors. He is being fed news that is variously pointed to advance causes of special groups. This makes it very difficult for him to find out the facts of many things that he would like to know. It is, however, possible to gradually become better informed on all the problems of administrative life. It is possible to learn more and more about how things should be done correctly. And gradually, by learning something positive, to get away from this eternal bleating, this eternal downgrading of everything. Actually, the individual who downgrades is, in most cases, cooperating with the very thing he wants to attack. And we must begin again as the ancients warned us in the first place, namely that the individual must be right in himself. The only thing that can protect him today is his own integrities, his own virtues, and his own dedications. These may in some ways be expensive. They may prevent him from gaining unfair advantages over other people. But he is here today and gone tomorrow. And when he departs from here, he is going to a place where value is everything. He is going to face an eternity of integrities, ill-prepared for the journey. It is much better to realize that he must be right here as more important and more permanent and more reasonable than any compromise he can possibly make. Compromises can bring him maybe through this material cycle he is in. But beyond this, when he goes out again into the universe that he came from, compromise is against him on every step. He cannot afford it. Now, being a fact that it's an educational sphere in which we now find ourselves, a little of the time that we have been wasting trying to forget where we are and what we are should be devoted to a careful study, as far as possible, of matters of importance to us. If we find in ourselves blind prejudices on certain fields, then it is our responsibility to ourselves and others that we dig into the subjects against which we have prejudice, study them thoroughly, become proficient in them, and find out what the facts really are. Anyone who merely speaks without knowledge or thought is simply contributing to the common degeneration of human hope and faith. Also in these days, we do note a strong revival of religious interest. This is very good. Religious interest is something that is perhaps one of the best symptoms that we have at the moment. But it is also true that religions are not actually living what they teach. In most cases, religions are sectarian, and they have become gradually more and more competitive. The result is each religion is composed of persons who believe that they are alone are correct, that they are better, wiser, and more virtuous than any other faith or any other belief. This leads to the weakening of the general texture. We have in the world today a block of about 3 billion people who claim religious allegiances or convictions. The only way in which they can prove their religion is by working together. If they are one united group, putting the principles of religion above all sectarian denominational differences, they could be the power that changes the course of history. they could achieve the thing that is necessary, the proof that the higher truths and ideals of mankind work together, whereas ignorance is competitive. Religion, therefore, could be and should be, and we hope will be, a basis for a union of peoples, and that gradually we will rise above all creedal conflicts. We will rise above all efforts to decide which is the holiest among us, and realize that the holiest among us is the one who is servant of all. Under this concept, we are developing more and more religious consciousness. Religion is coming back, and let it come back this time embodied in a true spirit of world brotherhood, and not come back again to fight over the various creeds and constantly try to convert people from one faith to another. What we do not need is conversion. What we really do need is dedication to human need. If we get more of that, the religions will flourish as never before. Now, out of all of this problem and everything that has to do with it, we come to another situation that's more or less important. Where do we go from here? Now, the future is a mystery and always has been. No one is quite sure what the future is going to be, but there are some major thoughts on the subject. The future is part of a great pattern in space. It is a constant motion. And Zen tells us something about it, and so does Taoism in China. The future is a dimension of realities. The future is the inevitable consequence of the past working on the present and continuing its procedures. Therefore, a good future must be more or less predicted from the accomplishments of now. If we have an alcoholic who refuses to modify his habits, we can predict a future for him. We will predict that he has, in due time, come to the end of his rope. He will have delirium tremens, and in a reasonable number of years will die an alcoholic, because he has no intentions of changing his ways. Now, as we look out upon the world around us, if nobody does anything to change things, the future will be the extension of the present. It will be the various harvestings of the crops we have planted. It will depend entirely upon the foundation that we have built, what the future will be. Now, in looking at it on that basis, we realize that we are passing on to posterity the worst dilemma man has ever known. There is nothing that we can really reasonably hope will go well unless we change some of the basic practices which are keeping it in trouble. We will never be able to fight the war that will end in peace. There's just no hope of this. We will never be able to exploit and exhaust our natural resources forever. They are expendable. We can never accomplish by any means processes or policies which are amicable to survival. We cannot hope that the future will suddenly change into a beautiful dimension. We cannot believe that unless we change things now, the future will be any better. So in the future, we see all kinds of achievements. We see people thinking in terms of extending the length of life to 150 years or more. It's quite scientifically possible this can happen. But what will it do if the world is the same as it is now? We will simply have longer time to suffer and pay taxes. And this has very little to offer us in the form of joy. Also, what will happen to people in the future whose education and development is for things as they are? the rise of the computer industry shows us one dimension. Things are changing very rapidly, and that which is a current fact today may be an absurdity tomorrow. It has happened many times in the past. But actually, while we cannot hope to diagnose in detail the future, we have no reason to hope that the advancement and even the perfection of computerization will have any particular effect upon human morality and ethics. It will only supply another tool for human beings to abuse.